Good evening, everybody. It's nice to welcome you back tonight. A few people who weren't here last week, welcome back. Nice to see you. Nice to have you. Tonight, we're not going to do regular, you know, what we usually do, which is halacha. We're going to talk a little bit about more general stuff in honor of Rosh Hashanah Haba'a Aleinu L'Tava, not so far away. And what I want to do is talk about Rosh Hashanah, like where it comes from historically. Then we'll talk about like one or two halacha, you know, things lemaisa we could sort of work on ourselves over the next little while, and then just end with one or two just very beautiful machshavos about Rosh Hashanah. Before I start, though, there's a I don't remember where I saw it and I don't remember the details, but there was some event or some episode. Apparently, it seems to be true that happened in Europe. I guess somewhere like 100, 150 years ago. And there was a Gentile who had a dispute with a Jew. It was around this time of the year. And there was a Gentile was the wholesaler, the provider of the material, and there was a Jew who wanted to take some material on credit and sell it as, you know, but the problem was the Jew didn't have a credit line or a credit history or good enough credit, and the Gentile didn't want to extend the Jewish fellow, the credit. And overhearing this dispute, one of the Gentile friends tells his Gentile friend, the wholesaler, the provider of the goods, why don't you just extend the line of credit? The Jew's not going to do anything wrong. It's Elul. Meaning, the Goyim understood that during Elul, we operate on a different level of consciousness, or a different level of conscientiousness. So, it's already Chaf Aleph Elul now. Maybe Chaf Bey is around there, so we're already two-thirds in. We should at least begin our conscientiousness and consciousness, at least now. It's never too late. But you know what's coming up this week? This week, not next week, this week. Before Rosh Hashanah, somebody's birthday, anyone know? Whose birthday? Chavetz Chaim's Yortzeit, I think, but whose birthday? This week, not next week. You say Adam Harishon, you're wrong, because that's next week. Baal Shem Tov, I wouldn't know. The wrong kind of guy to know those things. She's never been to my shiur, so she thinks I know stuff about the Baal Shem Tov. We're very misnagdisha here. Okay, so if you don't know the person's birthday or the birthday, we'll talk about it now. The Gemara Rosh Hashanah, Daf Yud, Amud Beis, Tanya, we learn in Braisa, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, V'tishrei Nivra Ha'olam. We're not there yet. Hold on. So the world's birthday was Tishrei, but Tishrei noldu Avos, not Yitzchak. He was born Pesach time, but Avraham and Yaakov were born in Tishrei. But Tishrei mesu Avos, they died as well. But Rosh Hashanah nifkada Sarah, Rachel v'Chana, who didn't have children, they got Hashem remembered them and remembered on the Tov on Rosh Hashanah. But Rosh Hashanah yatsa Yosef mi beis haAsurin, when he was imprisoned, he got out on Rosh Hashanah. And did any of you wonder, in Rosh Hashanah davening we say Zecher Litzias Mitzrayim? I understand Sukkot, we say Zecher Litzias Mitzrayim, referring to the Anani HaKavod, or the Sukkot Mamash, whatever they sat in. I understand on Pesach we say Zecher Litzias Mitzrayim, because it is. I understand on Shavuos we say Zecher Litzias Mitzrayim, because Shavuos, you know, Matan Torah happened in the process after Litzias Mitzrayim. But why on Rosh Hashanah do we say Zecher Litzias Mitzrayim? I don't know.
Maybe the purpose of creation was for...
That's too complicated for me.
No.
What are you saying? No, I want to hear.
Bris Mila.
Who's Bris Mila? I'm not following. Bris Mila. They didn't do Bris Mila in the Midbar. At Yitzias Mitzrayim, they did Bris Mila, right? In order to bring the Korban Pesach, they had to do Bris Mila. So they did Bris Mila before Korban Pesach, but that wasn't Rosh Hashanah time. Rina?
Nisan is also the beginning.
We'll get there in a minute, but what does that have to do with Tishrei, Rosh Hashanah? How does that relate specifically to Yitzias Mitzrayim? But how specifically related to Zecher Litzias Mitzrayim?
Maybe like the birth of the world versus the birth of the Jewish nation?
Yeah, but the birth of the Jewish nation was also not this time of the year. So what happened? Why is this time of the year Zeichel Yetzias Mitzrayim? Leva? Okay, so why? Oh, you're saying Rosh Hashanah only happened. We only have any of the Moadim. We only have any mitzvos. Everything. Every mitzvah is Zecher Litzias Mitzrayim, right? I could do, you know, I bench Zecher Litzias Mitzrayim, and I put on tefillin. It's still not Zecher Litzias Mitzrayim. And I, every mitzvah that we do is Zecher. I give tzedakah Zecher Litzias Mitzrayim. Okay, why? According to your rationale, should be all mitzvahs, no? So listen. Listen to the next line of the Gemara, and you'll see why. The next line of the Gemara says, "Berash Hashanah batla avoda me'avosin b'Mitzrayim." Even though they didn't go out till Tesvav Nisan, but they stopped. The Shibud stopped. Paro stopped being Meshabed b'nei Yisrael on Rosh Hashanah, and that's why we say Zeichel Yetzias Mitzrayim. Hi, Rebecca, welcome. That's why we say Zeichel Yetzias Mitzrayim on Rosh Hashanah, because that's the time that the avoda, the Shibud, stopped, and that's the real reason. That was all Rabbi Eliezer. So if you just take a pause for a minute, by the way, just one quick tangent. It happens to be all the things that happen in Rosh Hashanah are generally nice things. They're all positive things. It's like we do have an attitude and a perspective of Rosh Hashanah of trepidation, of fear, and that's healthy. But ultimately, all the things that happen in Rosh Hashanah end up being positive, right? We had Chana and Sarah and Rachel were all remembered, and they were, two of us were born, and Yosef got out of Beis HaSurin, and we stopped our Shiva. So it's all a good thing. All good things. And we'll talk about that at the very end of today's year. And finally, concludes Rabbi Eliezer, saying all these things happened in Rosh Hashanah and in Tishrei. B'Nisan Nigalu, of course, we got out of Eretz Mitzrayim in Nisan, but B'Tishrei Asidin Li Ga'el. Did you ever hear a phrase like that? You might have, but not the way I just said it. You'll see it in a minute what I mean. He holds, the first opinion holds, that B'Tishrei Asidin Li Ga'el, the Geula, God willing, happen, which will happen very quickly, will happen in, not like you all thought, in Nisan, but in Tishrei. So why do you all think that the Geula will happen in Nisan? That's because you all hold like the next opinion in this Brisa. Comes Rabbi Yeshua and says, no, you missed all the dates. You got them all messed up. The world was not created in Tishrei. The world was created in Nisan. And when did the others, when were they born? There are other psukim to prove it. They were born in Nisan. And what else happened? Okay, the rest of other things happened. And when did we leave Mitzrayim? In Nisan. When will the Geula happen? In Nisan. That's what you and I are typically familiar with, that the Geula is expected to happen in Nisan. But this is a machlokas. What it boils down to is this gigantic machlokas. When the world was created? Was the world created, according to Rabbi Eliezer, it was in Tishrei? And according to Rabbi Yehoshua, it was in Nisan. Now, gentlemen, and ladies, better yet, in davening on Rosh Hashanah, there's a phrase that we say, Hayom Haras Halam. But I guess in the time of the Gemara, I don't know if they had that line, but the time of the Gemara, they did have the line from davening, Zeh Hayom Tchilas Ma'asecha Zikaron Liyom Rishon. The pasuk, I don't remember if it's Shachar or Musaf, but that pasuk that we say during davening, Zeh Hayom Tchilas Ma'asecha, today, Rosh Hashanah is the day of the beginning of your Ma'aseh Yadecha, the beginning of your handiwork, the beginning of your creation. Who's that going like? That line in davening is assuming that Tishrei is the day that is the time when the world was created. So, the birthday that is this week is not Adam HaRishon. His birthday is on Rosh Hashanah, but the birthday this week is the first day of Ma'aseh Bereishis, which is Chaf Hayelul. I think that's Chavetz Chaim's Yortzeit, if I remember correctly, if I'm not off by day. But, so at least according to Rabbi Eliezer, not remember, it's a machlokes, but according to that first opinion, the world was created on, really, Tishrei, really, Chaf Hayelul, Chafav, Chaf Zayin, Chaf Ches, Chaf Tes, Lamed. At that point, it's the end of Elul, and Aleph Tishrei is, no, that didn't work. Let's try that again. Chaf Hey, Chaf Vav, Chaf Zayin, Chaf Ches, Chaf Tes, Elul, there are 29 days in Elul, and the next day is Aleph of Tishrei, which is the sixth day of creation. What happened on the sixth day of creation? Of course, Adam HaRishon was created on the sixth day, and that's why we call it Rosh Hashanah, because it's not the Rosh Hashanah of the world, it's not the birthday of the world, it's the birthday of the world in as much as the conclusion of the world, which is Brias Adam HaRishon, not the Brias HaOlam in the physical, non-human sense. Fine, let's put that aside. Now, we think of Rosh Hashanah as Yom HaDin, which it is, it's very much this case, but there are other Yom HaDin that we have. Anyone know any other Yomei Hadin besides Rosh Hashanah? What, Rebecca? Tu Bishvat is Rosh Hashanah La Ilanos. Fine, what else? Hoshana Rabba is something or other. We're not really sure what Hoshana Rabba is, but yeah. And what? Rosh Chodesh Nisan is Rosh Hashanah for something or other also. Okay, that's the first Mishnah in Maseches Rosh Hashanah. We're now going to move off the first Mishnah into the second Mishnah of Maseches Rosh Hashanah, and not speak about four Rosh Hashanahs, but speak about four different days during the year that the world is nidon, is judged. So one of them is, I don't know when the world is judged.
Tishba.
What?
Tishba
is not one of them, no. I'll share it with you. B'Pesach al Hatvua, Pesach, we're judged on our wheat crop. Atzeres, that's on Shavuos. Al Peiros Ha'ilan, fruits are judged on Shavuos. Atzeres is Shavuos. B'Rosh Hashanah, humans are judged, of course. And on Sukkot, we are judged on water. Perhaps Hoshana Rabba, on Sukkot, we are judged for water. For water. Hence, what do we do? What carbon do we bring on Sukkot? What? Simchas Beis HaShoeva, we drew the water and then we took that water and poured it on the Mizbech. Nisach HaMayim. That's the only time of the year we ever poured water, just pouring water on the Mizbech, right? Even the Mizbech needs to be hydrated. Baruch HaTah Adonai Eloheinu Melech HaOlam Shehakol Nehiyeh B'Dvaro. Speaking of which. Then, what's the one time of the year that we sort of, almost, are you allowed to bring fruits onto the Mizbech? Any korbanos with fruit? Why are there no korbanos with fruit? Because the Torah says you're not allowed to bring a carbon out of fruit. Ki chol se'or v'chol dvash lo saktiru mimenu yishel la'Hashem. The pasuk says explicitly you're not allowed to bring anything sweet onto the Mizbeach. It's a pasuk. Anyway, so we don't bring Bikurim onto the Mizbeach, but where do we bring our Bikurim? To the Kohen in front of the Mizbeach. So it's close. So we bring Bikurim on, when do we bring Bikurim? From when? Starting from Shavuos. And then thirdly, there's a carbon Omer. When is the carbon Omer brought? Trick question. Not a trick question. When is the Korban Omer brought? Don't say Shavuos.
Second day of Pesach.
Hence, we start counting Sviras HaOmer from bringing the Korban Omer. Now, those three Korbanos are unique because those three Korbanos are, well, it's the only fruit that we bring. It's the only time we bring water. And it's the first time that we bring wheat. But there's other stuff. Wheat is brought other times, but it's the first part of the new wheat that's brought, the new crop of wheat that's brought. Now, says the Gemara, fabulous Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, Daf Tes Zayin. Let me read to you this, excuse me. Let me share this absolutely beautiful Gemara with you. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Bnei Yisrael, why, actually, the Gemara says the following. Why does the Torah say that on Pesach you should bring the Korban HaOmer? Because Pesach is the time that the world is judged for wheat, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu to the Jewish people, I want you to bring me a korban on that stuff which is judged so that I could give it a bracha. Havi'u lefanai omer b'Pesach kedei sheyitzbarich lachem tvua. Meaning, if you bring the very thing that's supposed to be judged, you bring it as a korban, that will give a bracha to that very thing that you're bringing. Continues the Gemara. Mipnei ma'am ratar, why did the Torah say to bring the fruits on Shavuos? Because Shavuos is the time that there's a din on the peros. Says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, bring before me these fruits on the Mizbeach. Not on the Mizbeach. Bring before me these fruits. Kadesha tisbaruch lachem peros ha'ilan. So there'll be bracha on the fruits. When are we judged on Mayim? We're judged on Mayim on Sukkot. So says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem gives us a mitzvah. I want you to bring water onto the Mizbeach so that I could give you a bracha on the water. Now what should be the last line? When are we judged? So what should be the last line? What? I didn't hear that one. Sorry? Yeah, I have a few children I wouldn't mind, you know, giving over to Molech. This is on Teva, oh, shucks. So, Yes. That's what I would think, right? If we just follow the list, we're talking about on this Yom HaDin, we're makru the thing that should be nidon so that we get a bracha in that aspect. So if we ourselves are judged, that presumably should mean that we should somehow sacrifice ourselves, and that way we'll get ourselves a bracha. I mean, it's sort of an oxymoron. If you give your life up, then how are you going to get a bracha? So it might not just work out feasibly. But other than that practical detail, that's what should be the parallel, the next line, if we want to maintain a parallelism. I'll tell you the last line. The last line of the Gemara says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells B'nai Israel, Imru lefanai b'Rosh Hashanah, Malchios, Zichronos v'Shofros. In Musaf of Rosh Hashanah, gentlemen and ladies, I, Hashem, want you to say Malchios, Zichronos, and Shofros. Malchios, Kadesha Tamlichuni Alechem. Zichronos, Kadesha Yale, Zichronechem, Lefanai, Letova, so that you should be remembered for the best, with via a shofar. What's this concept of Kadesha Tamlichuni Alechem? What does it mean to be Mamlech Hashem on ourselves? We might have spoken about this once, but this is a very subtle but very nuanced and very important point. To be Mamlech Hashem, what that really deep down means is that you're willing to call it sacrifice. You're willing to say, I want to do X. Hashem wants me to do, same two ways, not X or Y. And even though I want to do X, I'm not going to do X because I'm going to do what Hashem wants. That's called being Mekabel Malchus Hashem. That's being Mamlech Hashem on ourselves. Even though I want to do it, I'm going to say, no, I have a boss. He tells me to do otherwise. That's self-sacrifice. That is self-sacrifice. So in a certain sense, the whole, not just, it's not the point to just say 10 psukim that relate to Melech during Musaf. It's those psukim are recited for the point of, as the Gemara says, Kedesha Tamlichuni Aleichem. What is being Mamlech Hashem on ourselves? Being Mamlech Hashem on ourselves is sacrificing the I, the ego, the id, whatever we want to call it ourselves, sacrificing that bit of, excuse me, sacrificing that bit of ourselves that is in dissonance with Ratzon Hashem, and that is Malchus Shemayim. So that is sacrifice. And as we do that, self-sacrifice, as if it were, that will bring us bracha in our din. This point actually bears itself out in the Pesukim, in Chumash itself. Everything I just told was the Gemara. And us reading carefully into the Gemara and understanding what the fourth line would be if it wants to be parallel to the first three lines. But if you look in Parashas Pinchas, where it talks about, if I could shove you, could you pass me a Chumash? If you look in Parashas Pinchas, where it talks about the Karbanos of all the Yamim Tovim, so by each of the Yamim Tovim, it says, you have to bring this Karban, you have to bring this Karban, you have to bring this Karban. And there's one change of phrase. In all the Karbanos of all the Yamim Tovim, it talks about, it starts with Sukh, it starts with Pesach, then it goes into, after Pesach, it goes into Shavuos, then it talks about Rosh Hashanah, then Yom Kippur, then Sukkot, then Shemini Atzeres. So when it gets to Rosh Hashanah, let's find Rosh Hashanah. By every one of the Yamim Tovim, when it says, bring a Karban, it says, V'hikravtem, 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 bring a Karban. Only here, it changes that and says, Va'asisem, Va'asisem. I think this is the word. I think that's the word. And Chazal understand, what's the change of word? Because Va'asisem Atem, there's a reference that you yourselves should make yourselves into a Karban, more than just bring a Karban like we do on the rest of the Yom Tovim. Okay, that's just a medrash. That's a medrash on that pasuk that Chazal added on that relates to this point. But now, what I want to do in the next few minutes, next, say, 5-10 minutes, I want to understand this discussion that we just had about us being nidon on Sukkot for water, on Pesach for weed, and on fruit, on Shavuos, and us ourselves on Rosh Hashanah. I want to ask a few questions on it. Excuse me. Just by the way, anyone here, do we have any math people here? Of course, our resident actuary, yeah. everybody else is a nurse or a social worker now. Or an OT, I'm sorry. So, a very simple question. We're judged when? On Rosh Hashanah. What are we judged on? How much wealth we're going to have? What else are we going to be judged on? How healthy we'll be? What other things will happen? But isn't us being judged, isn't included in us being judged how much water we're going to get, how much tevuah we're going to get, and how much fruit we're going to get? So where are the dins for the fruit and the wheat and the water? Isn't that all part of us being judged on Rosh Hashanah? This question is asked by the Ran. The Ran is one of the Rishonim. He lived mid-1300s. So I'm not going to give you his answer, because his question is more exciting than his answer. So we don't have to know the answer right now. But it's something to think about, just in terms of adding up the, you know, just working out the, figuring the detail. It's not a numbers question, but it's just like a mathematically minded question. Like, if you're being nidon for this, and for this, and for this, and for this, but one of them includes all the other three, so what are the other three for? Okay, that's a question to keep in mind. Now, the Ran, when he talks about this Gemara that we just asked, asks a very simple question. Why do you think Sukkot is the time that we're judged on the water? Think Eretz Yisrael, don't think America. It doesn't work in America. Why do you think Sukkot is the time we're judged on water? Ms. Russell, you just came back from Israel a few months ago, right? What's different about, yeah, Leva? Exactly, of course, it's right before the rain season. I remember being in camp in like third and fourth grade, we were learning the Mishnayos in Maseches Ta'anis. And there it talks about saying Mashiv HaRuach, Hamorad HaTal, and Varech Aleinu, the different words, the different changes that we make for based on the season. And the Mishnayos there say, B'yamos HaGeshamim, you say this. B'yamos HaChama, during the sun months, you say this. And I'm like sitting in camp, we're sitting in, those of you in Morashano, they have these Bandi buildings, anyone here? Anyone who spent more time in Morashah? There are these buildings, these educational buildings, where we have like the shir in the morning. And I'm learning this mishnah about Yomos HaGeshamim as opposed to Yomos HaChama. It's like pouring outside, cats and dogs in the middle of July. And we're learning, and I don't understand. What do you mean Yomos HaGeshamim, you say this, and Yomos HaChama during the summer, you say that? It's okay, so in Eretz Yisrael, of course, there's only one rain season. During the summer, it doesn't rain, period. So before the rain season, it makes sense. You should be judged on the rain before the rain season. Gentlemen and ladies, when do we have fruits? During the summer. So when do we get judged on our fruits? On Shavuos. When does the wheat crop come? There are two wheat crops. There's a winter crop and a spring crop. When does the spring crop come out? I don't know which one. Maybe the winter crop. When does it come out? After Pesach, the beginning of Pesach. That's when the new crop comes out. So all these things make sense that we are judged on the things when? Prior to when, right as that season's about to begin. So it's incredible. Hashem is nice enough to give us, this is how the Ran puts it, and listen to this nuance, that Hashem gives us a mitzvah to sacrifice that item, or let's phrase it in a different way. Hashem does a few things. He sets up the Yom HaDin right before that thing will come into play in the world, and besides that, he gives us a mitzvah to be makriv that specific thing, so we could get a bracha on the Yom HaDin, on the fruits that we're going to get, or the water that we're going to get during that season. That's how Hashem set the world up, and the Torah connected to the world. But the Rani asks a very simple question. That rationale works great for fruit, and for wheat, and for water. But why are we judged on Rosh Hashanah, you and me? So here, the Rani has two explanations that I'd like to share with you. One perhaps you've heard of, but maybe you're not familiar with the applications of it, and we'll talk about it for a few minutes. We mentioned that the world's birthday is this week, 25 of Elul, and Adam Rishon, of course, was created on Rosh Hashanah. Does anyone hear the question, though? The question is, I understand all the Rosh Hashanahs of the year, all the times that we're judged right before the season of that, the water, of the wheat, of the fruit. But why was, like, you know, what, baseball season starts in September or October, so humans have to be judged before, like, that's not when baseball season starts, it starts in April. There's no football season. I mean, what season starts now so we have to be judged before that season? Why is this the time? So Ran says that Adam Rishon was, of course, created on the sixth day of creation, which is Aleph Tishrei, which is Rosh Hashanah. And Chazal say the following about that day, and I might have mentioned this Chazal once in Shul at some point. But listen to the story of Adam Rishon's creation. Shah Rishona, Allah b'machshava. The first hour of the day, Hashem imagined or articulated the idea in his mind, Kiv Yachal. Shnia, the second hour of the day, Nisya'itz im Malachei Hasharitz, he convened and discussed this idea of making man, right? Na'asa Adam Betzalmeinu, Kidmustainu Nat E'esa. He spoke to the Malachim, if we should, about making man. Bishlosha, the third hour of the day, Kona Safar, he gathered dirt to create Adam Harishon. Bedalid, in the fourth hour of the day, Gavlo, he made him into like a dough, as it were. He take some water and some dirt and mush it around. Behei Rikmo, in the fifth hour of the day, he solidified it. Bevav, in the sixth hour of the day, Asa'o Golem, he made it into a golem, meaning a physical body without any neshama or life into it. That's what the word golem means. Golem is like a solid piece without any movement to it. Bezayin, in the seventh hour of the day, Zarek Bo Neshama, Hashem injected neshama into Adam Harishon. The Ches, on the eighth hour of the day, Hichnisa Gan Eden, Adam Harishon was brought into Gan Eden. On the ninth hour of the day, he was commanded with his mitzvah to not eat from the Eitz Hadas and the Eitz HaChayim. Basirius, on the tenth hour of that same day that Adam HaRishon was created, Sarach, he stank, that's the literal translation, meaning he did it the Avera, he ate from the Eitz Hadas. The 11th hour of the day, Nidon, he was judged. B'shtem Esrei, say Chazal, the 12th hour of that day, Yotza B'dimus. Anyone know what Dimus is? I got the point, but I looked it up on Google Translate. Google Translate says Dimas means amnesty or acquittal, which is a good translation. That's exactly what happened. Adam HaRishon came out and he was victorious in Din. That's what happened. That was the schedule of the day. You thought you had a busy day of Rosh Hashanah? I'm sorry, on Rosh Hashanah, Hashem was even busier. So, says the Ran, something very simple. If I'm Hashem, let's say for a second, let's say I'm Hashem, and I have these people, these human beings that I'm going to create. And I have to give them one day than a year that I'm going to judge them. What should be that day that I'll judge them? Well, if Adam HaRishon was judged on that day, on a certain day, and he was Yotza B'dimus, and he was found innocent, or acquitted, or found to be successful, again, that doesn't mean that he wasn't punished, but at least he wasn't destroyed utterly, which he could have been. He had one mitzvah and he messed it up. Two mitzvahs. He had Das and Esachayim. He messed up one of them. Hashem could have utterly destroyed him and the whole world. And nevertheless, Hashem, you know, figured out a way to let him be maintained in the context of history with a little punishment on the side. But nevertheless, Adam HaRishon was able to make it out alive. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Zeh Simon Levanecha, just like you were Omid Bedin on this very day, and you were victorious, you were Yotze Bedimus, that word, all of humanity, again, nothing to do with B'nai Yisrael, all of humanity will be judged on this day, because this is a day that's sort of misugal, that's prone to be favorably judged by Hashem. And that's why we are judged on Rosh Hashanah. So therefore, fruits are judged on Shavuos because it's before the fruit season, and water is judged on Sukkot because it's before the rain season. And wheat is judged before the wheat season, and we are judged because this is a day that historically is a day that's fortuitous and is positive and is mesugal for being judged favorably. That's the historical context of this day, why Rosh Hashanah is the day that we should be judged. And that's what the Ran says is the reason why Rosh Hashanah is picked for us and not any other day. Based on this, we come up with something very important. If it is true, in fact, that the world was created on a Chaf Hayelo and reached its a conclusion on Rosh Hashanah, but we can understand the Minhag in Barcelona. Interesting to note. Does anyone know where the Ran lived? The Ran lives in Barcelona. Pretty cool, huh? Anyway, so he's quoting the Minhag L'chei Nagu B'Barcelona, and the areas around Barcelona to get up and start saying Shlichos. When? Chaf Hei Elo. You and I are familiar that there are different Minhagim. Do we have any Sfaradim among us this evening? Ah, I appreciate that you came. But do you go to Shlichos since Rosh Chodesh Elo? You don't. Okay. But those people who are Sfaradi, I have some Sfaradi students, and like they fall asleep during Shir, not just for a week, they fall asleep in Shir for a month, because they're up half of the night. Can you imagine being for 40 days? Having to say slichas for 40 days is hard enough, like we do, you know, we get knocked out in a week and a half. So that's a different minhag. Our minhag, I guess similar to Barcelona, is around Chaf Hayelo. We have a different cheshbon exactly how to do it. but it's around Chaf Hei Elul. Where does that time come from? Or at least the Minhag of Brass Lana was Bedavka, specifically on Chaf Hei Elul. Why? Because that's the day the world was started to be created, leading up to Rosh Hashanah, when everything happened as we just discussed. Now, that all makes sense if we assume that when was the world created? Do you remember I told you a few minutes ago that there's a big machlokas when the world was created? One opinion says it was created in Tishrei. So then it makes sense that there's some significance to Chaf Hei Elul. Chaf Hei Elul was when the world started being created, and Adam was created on Rosh Hashanah, but that all fits in one person's scheme, if you assume that the world was created in Tishrei. But if you assume, like that other opinion that I mentioned earlier, that the world was created in Nisan, and the Geula will happen in Nisan, and again, we're not going to what the sources for these different opinions, they're learned out from Pesukim, that's not for now. But if it is true, and the Ran says, you know what, we paskin, whatever this means, that the world was created in Nisan. So then, is there any significance historically, if the world was created in Nisan, so is there any significance to Chaf Hei Elul? No. And therefore, according to that other opinion, that the world was created in Nisan and not in Tishrei, we're going to have to find another reason, or another time perhaps, to start Slichos around, or another time to figure out why Rosh Hashanah was chosen to be the Day of Judgment. Because Rosh Hashanah the explanation we've given for the past 10 minutes only makes sense that Rosh Hashanah is chosen as the Day of Judgment, because that's the day that Adam was judged. But that only fits if the world was created then, so he was judged then. But if the world was in fact created like the second opinion, in Nisan, so when was Adam HaRishon created? Aleph Nisan. So why do you and I celebrate Rosh Hashanah and Yom HaDin and Tekiah Shofar and all that other stuff next week? We're going to find another reason, the Ran says, to figure out why we celebrate, why the Yom HaDin is on Rosh Hashanah. So for this, he goes in a totally different mahalach. It's not as beautiful as what we just said, but listen to what he says. Let's just do a little math. It's just addition, don't worry. So we got the Torah what day of the year? Around. What? Around what, Leiba? Around Vav Sivan, something like that. Vav maybe with Zion, I don't want to get into that now. Fine, around Vav Sivan. So 40 days added to that gets you to what day? Let's assume it was like Zion or Vav, or 29 days of Sivan. Close. You're off by about 4 months. Shavasar v'tamas, correct. That's what Leiva meant to say, right? Shavasar v'tamas. So 40 days after we got the Torah was Shavasar v'tamas. Why does that work out that way? Because why do you think we have Shavasar v'tamas? Because Chet Ha'egel happened on the 40th day when Moshe didn't come down when we thought it or we expected him to. So we had Chet Ha'egel 40 days after Matan Torah. So what happened the next morning after Chet Ha'egel? Moshe got angry at us. Hashem got angry at us. We got our punishment. The next morning, where did Moshe go? Not to Starbucks, but back to Har Sinai. Right. So Moshe went to Har Sinai for a second set of 40 days. They didn't have Starbucks. I realized that. So Moshe went up to Har Sinai for a second set of 40 days. What was his goal going up for these 40 days? Don't say to get another set of luchos, because that's not the right answer. What? To make sure that we don't get destroyed, period. 40 days to beg that Hashem not destroy us. When did that end? Wrong. I told you, you have to be a math major for this. If we're now at Shavasar B'Tamas, what's 17th of Tamas plus 40 days? No, you're off by a month. Shavasar B'Tamas, let's say he went on back up the 18th day of Tamas. 40 days, what's the month after Tamas? Av. So the 29th of Av is the day that he came down. 29th of Av, it's not a special day. You've never heard of nothing special about 29th of Av. 29th of Av, he comes down for the Sefer the second time. What happened on the 29th of Av? Hashem said he won't kill us. Great. It's nice to be in a relationship with somebody who you know, they assure you that they won't kill you. It's a wonderful way to be in a relationship, right? No, it's not. So what did Moshe do on the next day on Rosh Chodesh Elul? He went back up for the third time. And how long was he there for? 40 days. And what's 40 days after Rosh Chodesh Elul altogether now? Yom Kippur, and what happened on Yom Kippur? Salachti kidvarecha, and we got what? The second set of luchos. What is the word salachti kidvarecha? When Hashem says kidvarecha, it's not just, I won't kill you, I won't destroy you. Salachti kidvarecha, like you asked, Moshe, like you asked that we should be, that the Ava and the Kesher should be reinstated the way it was originally, kidvarecha, like you wanted, that's how I salachti now. Right after the second set of 40 days, after the, you know, the first attempt to get true, to get forgiveness, we just got, you know, I ain't gonna kill you, but it's not the kapara that you wanted. After, by the time we got to Yom Kippur, after the third time up on Har Sinai, then we got Salachti Kidvarach. Yeah. By what? I'm not sure what you're referring to, I'm sorry. There's another time that says Salachti Kidvarecha? That could be. Moshe might have davened another time, but certainly on Yom Kippur, Hashem also says Salachti Kidvarecha regarding Chet HaEgel. And that's why, how do we start? You know, that's why Salachti Kidvarecha is part of our Yom Kippur davening, because it's something that has that was said on Yom Kippur. And that's what, now we understand, by the way, why Yom Kippur is the day of Kapara. Because historically, what happened on Yom Kippur? That's when B'nai Yisrael got the full ultimate kapara from Hashem. So when is it appropriate that we should have as our Yom Kippur for all of history? Yom Kippur, because that's the day that B'nai Yisrael were in this kapir. Now here's the part that I don't like so much. So the Ron continues and says, after he makes this, not the whole cheshbon, but he goes through part of this cheshbon, he says, so if it's true that we're going to get our chasima, our ultimate decision, or hopefully our kapara on Yom Kippur. So Hashem wants to set up things for the best, you know, to set us up for the best possible, you know, to be most successful as we could possibly be. So what does he do? So he says, a few days before, let me set, you know, the ball rolling, so that if you're really tzaddik, you're cool, everything's good, and if you're sort of in the middle, you have a few days to sort of fix your act, so that when Yom Kippur arrives, you'll be in good shape. So what's a few days before to sort of get your act together in case you're a Benoni? Rosh Hashanah. You know, I ask, maybe it should be 5 days, why does it have to be 10 days, maybe it should be 14 days. Anyway, this is the Ran says, this is the reason why Rosh Hashanah is the day that we are judged. Because since Yom Kippur, working backwards, since Yom Kippur is the day that we get the full kapara, Hashem wants to give us a chance for those Benonim to sort of mend their ways and to have the opportunity to improve themselves. So Hashem had to pick some, again, I don't know why it's 10 days, but Hashem had to pick some unit. I guess we work in a base 10 world. So Hashem had to pick a unit of time prior to Yom Kippur, in this case, 10 days, I guess, and that would be the time that we should be judged so that we have that interim period to sort of improve our ways for those of us, which is, I guess, all of us who are Beinonim, to be ready for Yom Kippur. And that, says the Ran, is the reason why we're judged on Rosh Hashanah, according to this other opinion who says that the world was created in Nisan, right? So you can't say anything about Adam HaRishon, because nothing happened with Adam HaRishon on the first day of Tishrei. So what did happen on the first day of Tishrei? Why is the first day of Tishrei our judgment day? Because it's a block of time that gives us enough time to get ourselves ready for Yom Kippur, which is the deadline, the Salachti Kedvarecha, the day, the historical day of Kapara. That's the second reason, or that's the reason that the Ran explains why Rosh Hashanah is on, why the Yom HaDin is on Rosh Hashanah, according to this opinion who holds that the world was created in Nisan, and that's the second reason altogether. Again, the first reason why the Yom HaDin is on Rosh Hashanah is on Aleph Tishrei, is because that's when Adam HaRishon was judged and Yatzah B'Dimas, and was acquitted and came out alive. And the second explanation that we're saying is, since Jewish people were forgiven on Yom Kippur, Hashem wanted to give us a setup time a few days before that. That's the context, historically, how we know, or how it's actually interesting. I don't remember, and I don't have it in my notes, but if I remember correctly, the Ramban asks a very simple question. I might have mentioned this last year, I think. How do we know that Rosh Hashanah is Yom HaDin? How do we know that Rosh Hashanah is Yom HaDin, right? the Rosh Hashanah is Yom HaDin. Ba'arba, the Mishnah says, Ba'arba prakim, four times a year, Ha'olam nidam, Rosh Hashanah, Kol Ba'i Olam, all the people of the world, not just Jews, all the people of the world, Ba'an Lefanav, Kifnei Mara, we pass in front of Hashem like sheep, one after another, and we're judged. But how did Chazal know that? Does it appear anywhere in Chumash? No. Does it appear anywhere in Nevi'im? No. Does it appear anywhere in Ksuvim? No. It doesn't appear in Tanakh. So how do we know? If I remember correctly, I once saw Ramban, who says that the only way that we know that Rosh Hashanah is the Yom HaDin is because, and this is incredible, we have a Mesorah, Ish Mi Pi Ish, going back to Adam HaRishon. We have Mesorah, Ish Mi Pi Ish, going back to Adam HaRishon, that he was judged on Rosh Hashanah. Again, this only works in the first half of tonight's shiur, that Adam HaRishon was judged on Rosh Hashanah, and that opinion. But we have Mesorah, Ish Mi Pi Ish, going back to Adam HaRishon, that was the day of judgment. And that's the only source that we have, says Ramban. There's no Pasuk. Okay. So let's put that aside for now. Let's move on I'd like to suggest two machshavos, perhaps that we could maybe work on a little bit or direct ourselves towards as we prepare in our tshuva in these days that are... And by the way, I forgot to say, after the Ram gives this second explanation of why Rosh Hashanah is the day of tshuva, is the day of din, to get us ready for Yom Kippur, which is the day of din, which is ready for Yom Kippur, which is the Yom HaKapara, HaKippurim, he says we could understand the other minhag of Slichos. That's why the Sfaradim begin Slichos on Rosh Chodesh Elul, because that's the time that is Mesugal for complete Kapara, starting from Rosh Chodesh Elul, when Moshe Rabbeinu went up on Har Sinai, for 40 days from Rosh Chodesh Elul all the way to Yom Kippur. That's the other minhag, the Sfaradim minhag, who starts Slichos on Rosh Chodesh Elul. That's where that minhag comes from. So this is an interesting thing, just to understand the historical context or the halachic context, where the different minhagim of starting slichos come from. I want to, again, now get something a little practical, a little more, you know, for us to work on. Talk about one idea, maybe another idea. And I'm not going to give any specifics about this idea, and everybody could apply it to themselves, but I want to just try to convey either an image or a paradigm of what it means for us to have a connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I'll illustrate it with the following mashal. So let's imagine we have a slave. You tell the slave, do me a favor, go to the store and pick up a few tomatoes and three cucumbers. And they go pick up the tomatoes and the cucumbers. And you say, these are not the right cucumbers. I want Kirby's. I don't want Persian cucumbers. So they go back and get you Kirby's. Then you say, okay, now I'd like you to peel them. And they start peeling them, and they're peeled. Then you say, okay, I want you to, you know, do the windows. They do the windows. You look at them, and you say, no, that's not how I like my windows done. And they start all over again. And they do the windows again. And then you say, okay, I want you to, you know, wash the floors, and they take some Lysol, and they mix it with water, and they wash the floors, and then you come and you say, you don't use Lysol on the wood floors, you use Pine Sol, not Lysol. Lysol's for the bathroom floors, not the wooden floors. So they take out the Pine Sol, and they do the floors again. And then they say, okay, and I want to make sure that you shine my shoes sometimes before Shabbos. And the slave says, I'm sorry, I don't shine shoes. I have my, you know, that's beneath my dignity. I don't shine shoes. Now, let's take it for a minute. He brought you the cucumbers and the tomatoes, went back to get you the right cucumbers. He did the windows the first time and the second time the way you liked it. He did the floor the first time and the second time with Pine Sol. And he's not going to do your shining of your shoe shines. That's below him. That's below him. That's not his cup of tea. He's not going to do that for you. What does that show about all the other aspects of the avdus? If there was one thing that the Eved refused to do, that means that the other things that they did until now were not avdus. It's just that they were okay going to the store and going to the store a second time, and they were okay doing the windows and doing the windows a second time, and they were okay doing the floor and doing the floor a second time. But that wasn't avdus. Because this, that's not my cup of tea. That's not for me. That's beneath my dignity. And therefore, even though they did 90% of what the master wanted them to do, that last 10%, it's not just they didn't do that last 10%, that last 10% was megala, revealed the nature of the entire relationship that had been working and was operating throughout the whole avdus. That's the mashal. The nimshal, I'm not going to give any examples, but all of us could sort of think in our own lives, is there are 613 mitzvos, a lot of mitzvos. It's not so heavy because we only have about 200 some odd nowadays. So we have, let's say, 270 mitzvos d'oraisa. And yes, we have lots of mitzvos d'rabbanan. And we have all this kind of restriction, that restriction. And sometimes we say, you know what, I'm pretty good because I do almost all the mitzvahs. And I follow almost all the dinim d'rabbanan. And I'm careful on almost all these things. Okay, we all have our, you know, things that we're not like, you know, that's not for me. You know, I'll leave that aspect, you know, to those people who live over there, you know. Or those people who are like that, not me. I do everything else I will do. Let's just think of what that means. If there's an aspect that I'm saying, this is not my type of mitzvah, this is not something that I have to be careful with, this is not something that is for me, then what does that mean about our entire relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Is it something that we're doing because it fits in with who we are and what we want to do? Or are we truly avadim, such that we could say, Hashem, I'm your Eved, and if I'm your Eved, I have the right to thrust upon you, Hashem, all of my needs, to take care of and to give me whatever I need, because that's the responsibility of an Adon to an Eved. An Adon has to give everything that the Eved needs. That's the responsibility. That's a halach in the Torah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is bound by that in a certain sense. Whatever the Eved needs, the Master has to provide. But that's only to the extent that we consider ourselves, that we hold ourselves as, indeed, Hashem's Avadim. To the extent that we, even if, again, there's one aspect of our avoda that we're not willing to subjugate ourselves to, that's megala, that our relationship is not one of avdus. And this is the mashal and the message that the Shari Tshuva writes, Rabbeinu Yonah writes in Shar Aleph, Halacha Vav. And he points out that, of course, no one's perfect. Adam ein tzaddik ba'aretz asher yaseh tov le'chata. The pasuk in Kohelet, it says every person does averos. We're not talking about a person that does an avera. Everybody does averos. This is talking about somebody who does mitzvos and does averos, but there's one type of thing that they don't want to, you know, there's an aspect of mitzvos, an aspect of Judaism that they just, you know, that's not for me. I'm not comfortable with this aspect. There, Rabbeinu Yonah says, that's a very serious kind of, I'll show you his words. If a Eved says to his master, Kol asher tomar li yaaseh, I'll do anything you ask of me. Zulasi, with the exception of Davar Echad, says Rabbeinu Yonah, Kvar Shiber, he broke, he destroyed Ol Adonav Me'olav, the yoke of his master from on him. V'hayashar be'inav yaaseh, and he's really just doing what he wants to do, what she wants to do. That's, I think, one thing. We could all think of where in our lives, in the community that we live in our own private lives, what those little things are that is not our cup of tea, that's not for us to do. It's one thing to think about. Another thing, this will be the only other eitzah that I'd like to give this evening. Then we'll finish with one or two machshavos. There's a city in Eretz Yisrael called Petach Tikva. And have you been in Petach Tikva? And have you heard of Petach Tikva? Good. Have any of you thought about what the name Petach Tikva means? It's beautiful. It's an incredibly beautiful name. The gateway to hope. It's an incredible name. So that word, Petach Tikva, is used by Rabbeinu Yonah, I think twice in his Sefer Shari Tshuva. Twice, maybe three times. He says, I'm going to give you an Eitzah, and this Eitzah is a Petach Tikva. It's like a little thing that if you do this, it opens up gigantic vistas, and you know, just it's a game changer because it's one thing, but it could revamp the entire structure of how we work and how Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to deal with us in our case Yom Haram. Let me tell you the Petach Tikva that Rabbeinu Yonah says is a suggestion. A lot of times, you know, we talk to people. Sometimes they're roommates, sometimes they're friends, sometimes they're sisters, sometimes they're mothers. And we don't always appreciate what they say, and we don't always say to them what we think, and we don't always say to them what we should say to them. And we're sometimes annoyed, offended, embarrassed by things they say to us. Sometimes we bear grudges. Sometimes we bear grudges for a day or two. Sometimes we bear grudges for a month or two. Sometimes we bear grudges for a year or two. And there are people who bear grudges for their lifetime. And Rabbeinu Yonah writes that to the extent that Hashem always works mida keneged mida, that if we sort of take what other people do that might not make us feel good and sort of take it to heart and bear that grudge, so when we might once in a blue moon do something to HaKadosh Baruch Hu kivyachol that is not what he wants, should he also bear that grudge for that day or month or week, the week or month or year or God forbid longer? Chas v'shalom. That's what Rabbeinu Yonah speaks about of being ma'avir al midosev. Yes, somebody said something. I'm not saying anyone has to be a shmata. But there has to be a way that even when in our interactions with other people, with friends, roommates, and especially when we live in the Heights where I know every Rav has his unique shilas that they get in this community. In this community, they get a lot of this kind of shas. This community, you know, if you have a lot of lawyers in your shul, you got a lot of, you know, ribbis shilas. If you're a doc, if you have a lot of doctors in your shul, you get a lot of medical ethics shilas. In this community, I get shas that no one else gets. Two sets of shilas. One set of shilas are all the kashas shilas that my roommate did this. I don't know why you're laughing. The second set of shilas that I get is all the dine mamonos between roommates and switching roommates and finding a new apartment and how do I deal with this person who used to be or should be or wanted to be or we don't want to be in our apartment, those kinds of shilas, which again, those are the two aspects that I'm probably one of the few, you know, these shilas don't appear in so many other shuls. So because of that, we have our own, you know, the setups that we have here in, you know, in our community, that there are just a lot of interactions between people that, you know, people are people, and when you spend time and you have to interact with people in all different ways, even if it's not the person of your, you know, you're stuck in a situation for a year or whatever the case may be, being ma'avir al midosav and having that ability to not bear a grudge and not let what somebody said or somebody did, let it get to you in a way that you bear that grudge and are angry at them and are, I'm not going to talk to you for whatever, or I don't talk to that person because of this or for that. We don't want Hashem to deal with us in the same reflexive way. If we're ma'avir al midoseinu, we sort of let things by and let things be and make it easy to make up between people, then this is the petach tikva that Rabbeinu Yonah says. If we act that with other people, then whatever I do with Hashem, whether it's in, I wasn't careful with kashrus, I wasn't careful with Talmud Torah, I wasn't careful with davening, all those other things, yeah, but Hashem, you know how I deal when people bother me. I just let it slide off my back and forget about it. So all those things that I did to you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's so much easier for us to ask Him, please, Hashem, let it just slide off your back, let it kivyachol, let it just, you know, yes, I did it, okay, so I'm sorry. You know, move on, go weiter, don't bear that crutch, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the petach tikva. Nechbad ma'od, Rabbeinu Yonah says, for us to be omid b'din. I want to finish with two very beautiful thoughts. There's a certain amount of, again, as we mentioned earlier, a certain amount of trepidation or fear that is very, very healthy this time of the year. And it's something that doesn't come naturally, and we have to sort of build ourselves up to build a sense of awe. And I was driving to Lakewood yesterday, saw some people there, and on the way to Lakewood, there was a gigantic billboard that said, "Join Temple Shari Emeth for the High Holy Days." A nice picture of a nice man, a nice woman, each one wearing their talis, holding the Sefer Torah. They're the High Holy Days. They're also called the Days of Awe, Yom Noram. We don't call them the High Holy Days. We call them the Days of Awe, Yom Noram. They're called Yom Noram for a reason. We should be able to elicit from ourselves the certain emotions that come out this time of the year that we might not be as, you know, I'm not saying we have to be tense and bited people, but within ourselves we have to start building up towards that yira. Listen to this question. If I were to ask you, when is the happiest time of the year? I don't mean that. I mean, when is the time that the people are happiest? I'm not talking about Vizman, Beis HaMikdash, Lo Yehuvam, Tevel Yisrael, Ketubah Avok, Yom Kippurim. I'm not talking about that. So we would say that the time, the epoch in which humanity would be the most rejoiceful would be Yimas HaMashiach. That's what I would assume. I think that's probably what most people, if they thought about it, would respond. Revolbe says that we have a pasuk that says something different. Yismechu HaShemayim. You've heard this pasuk before. V'tagel HaAretz. The heavens, the earth, everything is going to rejoice and be joyful. Yiram Hayam Ula'o. The seas will all jump around in happiness. Ya'aloz Sadai V'chol HaShabo. Everything in the universe will just be full of aliza, full of joy. When? Lefnei Hashem Kibalish Pot Es HaAretz. When Hashem judges us. That's so weird. When Hashem comes to judge, that's the moment that we're all going to be so full of joy, the whole world is going to be absolutely joyful. Not only is that weird, but it's so anti, you know, one thing again, if you've seen pictures of the Oscar, what's his name, Pistorius, whatever, trial. So, okay, I look on Google News to see what's happening in the world, and there's always, for the past 3 months, 4 months, 5 months, there's always been like his picture on, you know, the side of his, all those news articles about him. And every picture you see of him for the past 4 months has been a person in trepidation. And you saw it on his face for months and months and months. Those of you who have seen the picture, you know what I'm talking about. And for Din Basav Adam, when people are Omid B'din, it's terrifying. It's really scary. It really is. You're not in control. You have no idea what's going to, you know, what other people are going to decide, what a jury or a judge will decide. It's terrifying. But when we submit ourselves to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's the opposite. It's absolute joy. And maybe it's because of the following. This is what I want to leave you with. It's a little bit deep, but it's. I can't say I understand it, but I think it's a very powerful message. Before Yom Kippur, Ephraim Waxman from Muncie, I'm sure some of you have heard of him, gives a beyond fabulous tshuva drasha. And he says, speaks strongly and he says incredible things. I think it's like the night before Yom Kippur at like 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock. And there's a phone number to call in. I've done that for a few years. And in one of his drashas that I listened to, I wrote down the following thought that he said. And he asked a funny kind of question. That we know that the shofar is in some way symbolic of sobbing, right? The Gemara says that. The Gemara says that there are two kinds of sobbing. There's, and then there's, there are two kinds of sobbing. And the Gemara has different words for each of those two kinds of sobbing. One is the shvarim sobbing, and the other is the trua sobbing. That's the second kind of sobbing. And if you've ever opened up the Shulchan Aruch, you'll note that there's a gigantic siman that talks about how to blow all the different shvarims and the truas. And it's so precise, and it says how many seconds, and it's not working in seconds, it works in like the amount of time that it takes to blow the smallest amount, multiplied by 3, multiplied by 9, multiplied by 12. It depends how long your shvarim has to be enough to be 3 truas, and your trua has to be, and your shvarim trua has to be, the shvarim of a shvarim trua has to be twice as long as a shvarim for a regular shvarim, and the trua has to be 1/9 of this and 1/3 of that. And the numbers and the precision that's involved in blowing a shofar, you can't begin to imagine. But you could go home tonight in Chelek Vav and Shulchan Aruch and you'll see in Mishnah Berurah, and you'll see the precision that you need to, in terms of seconds and parts of seconds, how long each tekiah has to. A tekiah before a shvarim is long, it's only the length. If you have a shvarim, let's say it takes 3 seconds, then that tekiah could be 3 seconds. But the tekiah for a shvarim shua, let's say shvarim shua takes 6 seconds, so the tekiah has to be 6 seconds. Very precise. So if I may ask, Waxman asks a very simple question. If the whole point of the shofar is to be crying and sobbing, what is it that's more imprecise than crying and sobbing? So why, to model after that, do we blow a shofar with this incredible absolute precision of exactly modeled with such incredible accuracy and precision and punctilious detail? If it's supposed to represent our crying. I listened to this answer. I don't know where he quoted from some Svarma Kedoshim, some Sifrei Kabbalah, I assume, and they write that we're missing the point. shofar is not us crying out to Hashem. The shofar is Hashem crying to us. And when Hashem cries to us and sends us messages and sends us whatever He sends us, it's not just little. It's absolutely precise and detailed and punctilious to the finest T and the dot and the crosses of the T. Everything is measured and precise, exactly whatever Hashem needs to send to us and intends to send to us and knows what's best to send to us. That's what Hashem sends to us, and that's the precision of what Tkiyas Shofar is. And when we, on the other side of the coin, sort of realize that everything that comes our way didn't just happen to us, but everything is measured to us with such detail and care and love, precisely what Hashem knows is best for us, then I hope that could give us the koach to realize that as we ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu for going forward to give us good stuff, we have to realize that whatever we have been sent our way, whether we've sensed it and felt it and realized that it's from HaKadosh Baruch Hu and it's ultimately for the best, and even if it's been very, very, very hard to see and to feel, and the case of a lot of people, that is the situation. But to realize that those things are measured, are precise, Hashem sends exactly why we don't always know the answer, how we don't know the answer, when we don't know the answer. But to realize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is doing things precisely with His plan, according to what's best for each and every one of us, hopefully that will be able to give us the realization that when He judges us, it's a judging us of and we'll be able to really approach Yom HaDin with the Simcha, knowing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not out in any way to get us, Chas V'Shalom, but to give us bracha, and hopefully Hashem will give us all Shnas Chaim V'Shalom, and answer all of our tefillos for the best, and should give us, each one of us individually and as a community, bracha and hatzlacha and shalom, and only good things for shalom and it's Israel as well, and refuos and yeshuas to everybody who needs those, and we should all have a shnas chayim v'shalom, a ksiva chasima tova. Ve'ezus Hashem, next week, sometime after Rosh Hashanah, before Yom Kippur, I don't know exactly when, I don't know if it will be on Shabbos, or it will be like two or three nights before Yom Kippur, we'll have a tshuva drasha as well, and I hope you're able to let people know about that, and see you then. Okay, ksiva chasima tova.